Hi, everyone. My name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. I have just a few reminders before we get started today. We have several upcoming professional development opportunities available to you, all free of charge, and more information can be found on our webpage at nysrti.org. A copy of today's PowerPoint can also be found on our webpage under professional development and then under webinars, right where you registered to for today's webinar. At the end of today's webinar, we'll post a link to a very brief evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to respond, we do look at those and appreciate the feedback. Also, during today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. I'll also say that we have a nice small group today, and we do have some videos for you, and I do hope you'll bear with us if there's any technical issues. That's my disclaimer, because we had some issues in my testing, but everything looks good, but if there are any issues, please bear with us. At this time, we are very pleased to have back with us Dr. Allison Boardman to present the third webinar in our Strand 12 series, Implementing Collaborative Strategic Reading in Grades 4 through 12. Today's topic is Get the Gist. Dr. Allison Boardman is an assistant research professor in the School of Education at the University of Colorado Boulder, where she teaches courses on differentiating instruction. She conducts research and works with school districts across the country to improve students' reading comprehension and English language proficiency in general education settings. She has written books and numerous articles on teaching reading comprehension. And at this time, I'd like to welcome back Dr. Allison Boardman.
Hello, everyone. And Molly, I'm looking at my screen, and I don't see the buttons that tell me how to advance the slides.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much. I feel much better now. I can see that we have a few people who were with me last week when we talked about Click and Clunk, and also a few people that are new. So welcome back to those of you that were here for the previous sessions, and welcome to those of you that are new. Our goals for today are to review briefly the Click and Clunk strategy. And for those of you that had a chance to try it out in your classroom, I'm really interested in how it went and happy to answer questions and to debrief. And those that didn't hear about it or didn't have a chance to try it, I know will also benefit if you're willing to share with us any ideas. We are going to be focusing on the Get the Gist strategy. That's a main idea strategy. And then at the end, as I've done in the previous webinars, we'll talk a little bit about the classroom resources that are available to you. I will also be pointing you to some additional mini lessons and practice sheets and different ways that you can think about how to work with your students on Get the Gist, because this is one of the trickier skills for kids to learn and to do well. So just as a reminder, this is the plan for strategic reading, and I hope those of you who haven't been here before and might be seeing this for the first time will notice that there really isn't anything new on this plan. So collaborative strategic reading includes before, during, and after reading strategies. And these are all tried and true methods. Each one individually has research support. And of course, we have quite a bit of research on support on putting them all together in this routine or a model that we call collaborative strategic reading. And those of you that might be familiar with reciprocal teaching should note the similarities. This is actually a derivation of reciprocal teaching that Jeanette Klinger started about almost 20 years ago now, where she was in classes in southern Florida, and they were almost exclusively English learners, and also they were inclusion classes for students with disabilities and students who were at grade level or above. And she realized that in order for kids to be working together, to be learning from and talking about text, they really needed a lot of scaffolds and supports. So throughout CSR, we have built in many resources for students and for teachers. And one of the most important resources is this idea of having a routine, so that when kids are reading with CSR, they know what to expect. They come in the classroom and they know that it's going to look pretty much the same way each time, though the teacher will emphasize different things perhaps. And in a lot of the classrooms in schools I work in, we see CSR across the content areas. So a student might use CSR one day in science with one teacher if they're in middle school or high school, perhaps in social studies another day, and in language arts a third day. This is really helpful to students to be able to see these same strategies that are woven throughout their content area learning. And today, the one that I have circled is get the gist. So this is the main idea strategy. There are a couple of important resources I want to remind you of. One of them is the CSR Learning Log. This is where students can keep track of their learning as it happens. It's also something that can be used later. Teachers can grade the learning log. They can offer feedback. Students can go back and revise. And they can also use it as a study tool. So you could think of perhaps the students reading several different readings on the formation of the Mayan civilization, for example, and then taking those different perspectives that they've been reading or those different ideas and putting them together for a culminating project, perhaps a research paper or other kind of project where gathering information from a variety of sources might be needed. The CSR expert role cards are another essential feature. In CSR, we have students working in small cooperative learning groups. And in those groups, every student has an individual learning log. Every student has their own text. But they work together on different aspects, led by the CSR experts. So the CSR leader has a job, the CLUNK expert has a job, the GIST expert has a job, and the QUESTION expert has a job. But different from some of the other cooperative learning models, in CSR, everybody does all aspects of CSR, and the role expert just guides or facilitates that particular strategy. So I want to make sure you note that. In some models, for example, there's one person who's in charge of vocabulary, maybe identifying the words and figuring out the definitions and sharing them with the group. Here, everybody does all the work, but the facilitators for each role at each time in CSR are the ones who kind of take the lead of making sure that aspect happens. So Click and Clunk was the strategy I introduced last time. This is a metacognitive strategy. So first, students are taught that while they're reading, they really need to monitor their understanding. But since that's kind of a big task and not everybody knows how to do that, we give them a routine for how do you monitor your reading? Well, one way to do that is to be thinking of words or ideas that are confusing while you're reading. So as kids are reading, they're thinking about that. And then when they're done with a short section of text, not the whole entire text for a day, but maybe a few paragraphs that the teacher will divide up for them, they will stop and identify words or ideas that are confusing. And then, led by the CLUNK expert, the group will work together to figure out the CLUNKs. And then, as a final check, kids put the definition back into the sentence to make sure it makes sense. So I'm wondering what you all think, those of you who might have questions based on what I just presented or had a chance to try the Click and Clunk strategy. Is there anyone who would like to use the chat feature to share how did it go? And if you haven't had a chance, are there any questions that you have about the Click and Clunk strategy? And I see that one person is typing, so I'll just wait for a minute or two. And while they're typing away, I'm going to give you a tip. And that tip is, I was just actually in New York City working with some teachers on CSR, and one of the questions that came up was, is it okay for the teachers to identify the clunks? Could the teachers come up with a list of words that they know are going to be tricky for students or they suspect are going to be tricky, and then just give them to the students for the students to figure out? And the answer to that is that for the most part, we actually want the kids to be the one who identify the clunks. And the reason is this is their strategy. So we are trying to get kids to be more actively engaged in their reading, and we are trying to get them to be more actively engaged in understanding when their comprehension breaks down. And if the teacher is the only one who is identifying the difficult words, the students lose that metacognitive piece and the agency of choosing which parts are confusing to me. And so I do want you to think, you want to have a list of words ready so that if kids are not identifying clunks, you might ask them, please define the word biodiversity or whatever a difficult word is so that you can help them use the strategy effectively. But we really want to help them get to the point where they are identifying their own clunks. So Melissa has a question, and she's asking, if another group member knows the meaning of the clunk, do they still have to use a fix-up strategy? That's a great question. And on the cue cards, which you can download from the website, and I'll remind you of the web address at the end of the session, on the back of the cue card, when the clunk expert guides the group, the first thing they say when somebody identifies a clunk is, does anybody know the meaning of that clunk? And if somebody else knows the meaning, then they can share it. And then they put it in, they make a definition, make sure that everybody has a shared definition. And then they put it back into that sentence to make sure the definition makes sense. So, Melissa, they're not using fix-up strategies necessarily, but they are rereading the sentence and they are checking to make sure that the definition that that student has provided makes sense in the context of the reading. And that's a really important piece. And kids will catch when maybe a student sort of knows a word or they know a word, but it means something different in the reading that they're looking at for the day. So that process of discussing and putting it back in the text is still really important. What we don't want the kids to do is just take a definition that someone else gives them, write it in the learning log, and move on, because that's not helping with comprehension. And Joanna is asking, she's used this strategy, and the idea hits home with students that it's okay to know you don't know. I give students anchor clunk cards in their binder so they have an easy reference, and it helps. That's a great idea. I also have each student with their own fix-up strategies. And there is a critical aspect of it, too, where you want to talk with kids. Who had a clunk that they were able to figure out today? How did you figure it out, and did that help? And the kids really actually enjoy the click and clunk process. They like helping each other. They like being able to be successful at figuring things out. And so it's really a nice strategy for them. And that discussion around how it all works and really highlighting kids that are doing well with clunks. A lot of times I like to come into class with my own clunk and say, oh my gosh, when I was reading last night, I had came across this difficult term, and here's what I did to figure it out. And in terms of grouping, great question, Colleen. We do recommend heterogeneous grouping. So in general, you want the groups to be selected by the teacher and to have a variety of students with different language proficiencies and interests and reading ability. And we want kids also who can work well together. So sometimes it takes a little while to figure that out. Can you ever group kids homogeneously? Well, sure. You know, on occasion, you might have three different leveled readings on the same topic, and you might want to have an advanced reading with kids who are up for that challenge. Whether or not they're good at reading, they might be really good at understanding, and then the groups can come back and talk with one another. But one of the benefits of CSR is being able to have kids who are at different levels, and I mean that word broadly in all different ways, working together to access challenging content and challenging text. is there a certain amount of time to spend on clunks? So kids can really go clunk crazy. They love click and clunk. I walk around the room when kids start to work on their clunks. And if you see that the other groups are moving on to get the gist, or if you know that it's a challenging section and it's going to take a while to figure out the main idea, it's okay to move kids on. They don't need to have the perfect dictionary definition, and they need to learn that what they're trying to do is really figure out what that text means and how the word supports the understanding. A very, very rough time estimate would be about 12 minutes per section of text, a couple of minutes to read the text, maybe 4 or 5 minutes for click and clunk, and about 5 or 6 minutes for get the gist. And in the beginning, it can help to time students so that they can start to gauge how long these things take. After a while, you can put a timer up on the board, or you can give kids timers to monitor their time, and things will start to move more quickly. You can also gauge the reading. So you might say, today you're only going to be able to figure out one clunk with your group. So pick a really important term and work on one. Generally, together, the group will not do more than 3 clunks, even if individually kids have more clunks written down. All right, let's get on to get the gist. And if you think of any other questions that relate to click and clunk, feel free to write them down, and I'll see if I can catch them at the end. So what is get the gist? So similar to preview, similar to click and clunk, we have a routine for get the gist. And here, the students first name the who or what that the paragraph is mostly about. Then they identify the most important information about the who or what. And then they write a gist in about 10 words. And I would really say that it's more like 10 to 15 words. If it gets over 15 words, what's going to happen is kids are either trying to retell rather than synthesize, so they're trying to get everything in there. They may be providing too many details that might be covered by a superordinate term that could combine some of those details. And I just had a teacher actually in the professional development on Monday, and she said, oh, I can really see how this works now because my gist was 20 words and it took a lot of work for me to get it down to 10 or 15, and I can see why it's important, where that synthesis came from, going from big to small. So it doesn't have to be 10 words, but it probably shouldn't be more than about 15. Get the gist is used during reading. So students stop and find the meaning of their clunks, and then figure out the gist at the end of each section. Note, if you weren't here or if you didn't remember, that the teacher is going to predetermine the sections of text and either mark the sections. If it's something that's copied, you could have the kids put sticky notes. Somehow the kids need to know what comprises a section of text. Why is it important? Well, even great readers don't remember everything they read. And in fact, successful readers process individual ideas, but remember just the most important parts or the main ideas of what they read. And they also might remember a few of the interesting details. During reading, strong readers implicitly generate a gist after each paragraph. They may not even be aware of this. And then they make inferences and connections between the paragraphs. And there's been some interesting research looking at eye movement, and they give people special glasses, and as they're reading a text, they watch to see where their eyes go. And it's not linear, so you don't start reading at the beginning and go to the end, even though that's how it feels. You actually, even though you're reading the words in order, your eyes are quickly scanning back up and going forward and back up and going forward as you're trying to infer the meaning, and make those connections between what you just read, what you're reading right now, and what you're about to read. So that's pretty interesting. So what we're trying to do with Get the Gist is to get readers to be more explicit and intentional about generating those main ideas that they may not be doing automatically. As students determine the gist and discuss the key ideas about a section of text, they're doing a lot of great literacy development skills. So they're elaborating on key concepts, and they're using academic language. They're clarifying understanding. They're using textual evidence, a big push, of course, in the Common Core. They're rereading. They may be asking each other questions. And they're distinguishing the key ideas from the details. So these are all very important aspects that are happening throughout this an iterative process of working and thinking on your own and then discussing and giving each other feedback in a group. What about English learners? Well, getting the gist, this process, scaffolds comprehension, it increases memory. It certainly involves higher level thinking and the metacognition that we've been talking about. It also provides a purpose for reading. So I know that when I get to a section, I'm going to have to generate a main idea. That's a really important piece of the purpose that kids will become familiar with, and they'll start to look for it as they're reading. They'll be generating main ideas on their own after a while. And, of course, it allows teachers to monitor comprehension. So as you're listening to these conversations in your classroom and you're looking at students' gists, you start to have a sense for who is understanding and who is still confused about what the text is trying to say. I just heard a wonderful talk by P. David Pearson, and one of the things that he talked about was digging the meaning out of the text. You know, that the first thing kids are doing is digging the meaning out of the text. They really need to know what the text is about. And then once they have that understanding of what the author is saying, then they can start to think about what they think and make some connections that are outside of the text. But you have to get that base understanding first. So let's practice and just see. I'm going to show you, we can't really practice together so much, but I'm going to show you what happens with this main idea generation, and then I'm going to give you a lot of different examples. So here is a paragraph. A seabird is any bird that spends most of its time at sea and depends on the sea and its islands for all its basic needs. The sea provides food, and its remote islands and rocky outcroppings provide safe nesting and resting places. For 60 million years, these highly specialized, diverse birds have adapted to life on the world's vast oceans. So the first question then is, what is the most important who or what? Well, it's seabirds, because this whole paragraph was certainly about seabirds. And this is a very straightforward paragraph and the type of paragraph that you would want to show to your students when they're just getting started with Get the Gist. So what is some of the important information? Seabirds spend most of their time at sea. Seabirds depend on the sea and its islands for their basic needs. And the sea provides food and resting and nesting places. So we've got to come up with a gist that combines this important information. And we know it's going to have something to do with seabirds, so it helps to start with seabirds. And then let's think about what we're learning. They spend most of their time at the sea. They depend on the sea for their basic needs. And it provides food and resting and nesting places. So here are a couple of examples. You might even be able to think of a better one. Seabirds get what they need from the sea, and seabirds depend on the sea for everything they need. So that's how Get the Gist works. And for kids who are really having trouble going from the most important who or what to the actual gist, this intermediate step of identifying the important information is really a key factor. And there's a couple of ways that, or many ways that teachers do it, but a couple of them to mention. It's great to model this for your students and also to help highlight some of these key pieces, and I'll show you how that works in a minute. Another thing that can be really important for students is to do this intermediate step, the important information, in their small group. So they can either write down some of the key points on their learning logs, and we have a scaffolded learning log that gives space for that. Or they can use something like a whiteboard, and then together, let's say a group of four students can have one place where they're able to write down the most important information, and then they can use that to write their gist. So I hope you can see how that would be a helpful scaffold. So rather than trying to synthesize an entire paragraph or even a half a page, what you're trying to synthesize is just a few key pieces of information that you have already extracted. So let's look at another example. This one maybe is a little bit trickier. Have you ever felt pain in your stomach? Most of the time, stomach pains are temporary and go away quickly. The pain from peptic ulcers, the most common type of ulcer, is very different. People who have peptic ulcers feel a sharp burning sensation in or near their stomach. They often do not want to eat and have a difficult time sleeping at night. This burning sensation intensifies directly after meals and sometimes involves vomiting. People all over the world suffer from peptic ulcers. This is kind of a gross topic, I'm sorry, and I didn't read the title to you, which is The Discovery of Heliobacter pylori. So you should already be thinking, well, what is the most important who or what? And what we do with students is we have them stop and discuss and agree on the most important who or what prior to writing their gists. And the reason we do that is to make sure that everybody has a shared understanding, at least of the what is the very most important thing about this section of text. And then kids go and they write on their own and then come back together and share. And we didn't used to have that intermediate step of working together to come up with the most important who or what, but we realized that sometimes there were a few kids in a group who really just had not grasped what the topic was at all. And by stopping and having that kind of little pre-discussion, very, very quick, 30 seconds, definitely less than a minute prior to writing, it really set them up for writing a gist. So here we have, well, what is the most important who or what? I think it's probably pain or peptic ulcers. And so what I would do with kids, and what I'll do now, is I'm just going to show you. So here is that paragraph again, the same one I just read to you. And look at how many times pain is talked about. And I don't know what color you have, but mine is kind of a light blue. So we see it in almost every line of the text. There's some reference to how much it hurts. So that's pretty important. And then the other thing that's talked about a lot is peptic ulcers. So you can see that term in yellow coming up over and over again. So it could be that the kids say, well, you know, some of them think it's pain, some of them think it's peptic ulcers, and that's fine. And one thing to note about the main idea or the gist is there may be gists that are correct, more than one, but there are definitely gists that are incorrect. So that's a tricky thing to help students understand, is that we're going to give feedback, we're going for high quality, but it's not just one that they're trying to read out of the teacher's brain. But there are also gists that are incorrect and not acceptable. So we're working for something that's high quality, really captures the essence, but it is likely it can be worded in different ways. And Colleen is asking, how long do you practice that skill as a group before kids can do it independently? And I think sometimes we wait too long to have kids trying it on their own. One of the things that we have found with Get the Gist is if you talk too much about it and then just one person writes it or then everybody writes the same one, all the ideas kind of don't get credit. It's like everybody gives input, and then the smartest kid in the group writes it down, everybody copies it, and then everyone forgets that all these ideas were shared because only one person wrote it. So to your question, I would start to have kids writing scaffolded gists on the very first day that you introduce it. You might do it in a guided practice where together the class is going to identify the most important who or what. And then let me show you the next part of here. So we've got, let's see how we're doing on my, oh, it wants to start me again. Sorry about that. So here's the important information. They're painful near or in the stomach. They can last a while and stop people from eating or sleeping. And they occur in people all over the world. So if we look at that text again, here you can see where that information is found. This is something that's very common. It hurts a lot, and it happens after meals. So if we go back, we've now gathered quite a bit of information that can help with the writing. So I would say after modeling once for kids, I would then do a guided practice, and I would probably do that maybe the entire first lesson that you're going to do it. You know, and it could be just 20 or 30 minutes. And we do have a lesson that you can use if it makes sense. You can also change the readings so that there are different texts that are more appropriate for your students or aligned with your content better. But if we have gone and we read this reading, we've identified the most important who or what and the important information as a class, as a group we've done that, I would then underneath there put the word peptic ulcers. For me, that one's easier. And then a line. And have students finish that sentence with what they think is the most important ideas about the text. So here are a couple of examples. Peptic ulcers are common and painful and disrupt many activities. Peptic ulcers are so painful in or near the stomach that they disrupt everyday life. So some of the things that are common in these two gists, they both have peptic ulcers. They both reference the pain. They both talk about disrupting activities. And they both talk about how it's common or how it, actually, one of them talks about how common it is, and another talks about how it disrupts everyday activities. So what you can do when you're with your class is you can have the kids start to get their ideas out there. They can share with a partner, and they can decide what is the same in both of our gists and what is different. And if something is the same, do we agree that it should be there? And if something is different, do we think that whoever is missing should add that piece? And then those partners, those two, can come up with a gist together that might combine the two gists. Or it might represent the information in one of them if that gist is better at capturing the main idea. So there's lots of really fun ways that we can break down this main idea. I think the problem with main idea, a couple of problems in classrooms. One, it's just a hard skill. So even when I was working with 50 teachers on Monday and Tuesday, they found it difficult to get the gist, and I find it hard too. It's really hard to figure out what the essence of a section is and then to be able to put it in a small number of words. So you've got to really work at it and try it and do things like using a whiteboard or doing it on a a chalkboard if you have one still, so that people can erase and not feel bashful for getting their ideas out there so that they can be revised. Then the teacher can do a lot with putting up just two gists onto the board or, onto the PowerPoint and talking about what's similar and what's different as a starting point. Okay, so I'm going to show you some students, actual kids, who are getting the gist. And they are getting the gist from this reading called Earth Friendly Fabrics that I believe you have in the section of the webinar where the PowerPoint was. So if you want to see the full reading, you may look at that either now or on your own time. And these are seventh graders in an English language arts class. This is a mixed ability classroom. So there are students with disabilities, there are kids with gifts and talents, there are kids who are English learners, and there are kids who are native English speakers. And I hate to keep reading to you, but I'm just not sure how else to make sure we all have everything, we're all on the same page before we watch the kids get the gist. So I'll just go ahead, if you don't mind, and read it to you. So born in the lab. Making clothes and shoes traditionally involves harsh chemicals and lots of energy. Some fabrics, such as cotton, leather, and wool, begin as plants or animal parts, but that doesn't mean that they're gentle on the environment. Cotton plants, for instance, are often smothered with noxious chemicals to keep away bugs and weeds. Other fabrics are born in laboratories, where scientists create molecules called polymers and make synthetic, human-made materials such as polyester. Textile companies weave or knit synthetic threads into fabrics that are remarkably silky, sturdy, and quick to dry. The problem, from an environmental viewpoint, is that most synthetic fibers are made from petroleum, which must be extracted from the ground. Accessing, transporting, and processing oil is expensive, and the supply is limited. Still, petroleum-based materials appear in exercise clothes, shoe soles, plastic zippers, buttons, dyes, and thousands of other products. To overcome this reliance on petroleum, some companies have experimented with creating materials from substances such as corn sugar, then weaving the resulting threads into fabrics. Other companies have developed products from recycled materials. Another reason to read this text to you is this is how students do it in their CSR groups. So kids will be in groups of about four students, and they may take turns reading. Everyone has a text. Everyone is required to follow along. In some classrooms, teachers ask students to whisper read. But the idea here is that in each group, you may have some students who are not able to read this challenging text. It does not mean they can't understand it. It just means that they may not be able to read it fluently. So having kids read out loud.
Okay, we lost Dr. Boardman. Bear with me, folks. Okay, I'm going to get started on the video.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can, yes, great.
Okay, I'm back. All right, so sorry.
Okay, Dr. Boardman?
Yes. We're
okay.
Having a video problem.
No, it played fine. Did it not play for you?
Oh, no, it didn't. Great.
Okay, I hope the video played okay for everyone. Let us know if it didn't.
Okay. Terrific. So in that video, we see kids working together to get the gist. And if you would take a minute in the chat feature and type in any thoughts you have about what you saw or any questions you have about what you saw, and I'll give you a few seconds to type in what you noticed in the video. And while you're typing, I'm going to show you the student gist. So these are the four gists that the student in that group shared. So go ahead and type in any questions that you have. And if you don't have any, we can move on. Okay, does the teacher go over the gist with the students after each section or when the students finish all sections? That's a great question, and it can be done both ways. In the beginning, when kids are just learning, sometimes it is helpful to pull the groups back together and to make sure that everybody has a shared understanding. On the other hand, what happens as kids become more proficient with the process is that they actually don't need to come back after each section. And you'll see that kids are moving at slightly different paces, and it can be a little bit disruptive to bring them back together. So when is it good to bring the whole class back together? It's good to bring the whole class back together in the beginning when they're just learning. And it's also good to bring them back together if you have a particularly difficult section of text. So there is, you might be walking around and you're talking with students and you're looking at their learning logs and you realize the kids really are having a difficult time understanding this section and they need a little bit more scaffolding from me. And that's a good time to bring kids back together to make sure they have a shared understanding of the most important information. There is a concern about the leader and that the leader has to be a strong student in order for this to be successful. And I think that's a good point in the beginning. So in the beginning, you do want to pick leaders who are the kinds of kids that are trusted by other kids, that are going to help the group keep on task, who are going to help monitor the time. And there's a few ways that we do that. So we meet initially with role-alike groups. And so the leader group will meet with the teacher and we'll talk about what is important about this role. How do I, what do I have to do and not do as a leader, et cetera. And that can be very helpful. And when you look on the online toolkit, you'll see some other ideas for getting the kids up and running with the different roles and the collaborative grouping. Another thing, though, is that you want to look for kids who can be developed as leaders. So everybody knows CSR, they're very comfortable with the model, but there are some kids who have the potential to be a leader, and those are the kids who you might want to work with individually and then give them that responsibility and really scaffold it and help them so that they can shine. And Robert is saying, I thought it was interesting that the students were counting the number of words in their gists. So yes, I think that the students in this video clip were overly concerned with the number of words in their gist. But on the other hand, a strategy that this teacher used that actually can be helpful in the beginning is to have kids, I don't think we saw it in the video, but they had done it before, where when you're working out your gist in your head, you're kind of rehearsing with your fingers. So, you know, like let's say you were doing number two, you'd actually be kind of counting before you wrote on your fingers. Some companies recycle while others use chemicals, materials, and other stuff. Okay, I've got 11. Pretty good. So that's a good way to help in the beginning with getting the words down. But we don't want to be overly stuck on the number of words, which the boy in GIST 1 was, and that's why he was missing a word that made it so his GIST didn't make sense. So there is this balance between trying to get it to a shorter number of words, using some strategies like counting on your fingers to help you get there, but not becoming so hung up on it that you can't actually get a good sentence. And I have to say that some colleagues and I just finished a study of about 500, a little bit more than 500 student learning logs, and we are trying to understand what kinds of strengths did kids have when they had high-quality GISTs, and what were some of the areas where they were more likely to have an inaccurate GIST. And to do that process, we went through many, many readings, and the researchers and I wrote GISTs. And what we found is that in some readings and in some sections, it was almost impossible to get a high-quality GIST in 10 words. So one of the takeaways was you can't be too hung up on the word count. A couple of things to notice. So if you had these four GISTs in your class, you might be wondering, well, which one seems like, you know, it's right, which is the best one? And I think probably the third one may be the one that kind of captures it the best. The fourth was the one that the girl was talking about and that the boy was saying back to her, well, you don't really have the bad part in there. I think you're missing the bad part. And I think she does. She was talking about the chemicals, and she went back and defended her ideas by saying these were the harsh chemicals, but she was using a detail involving corn sugar, and that's an example rather than, summarizing the information. So this number four is not bad, but could be revised slightly to be a little bit better. I think number two is okay. It's not a bad GIST, and number one is not a great GIST because it's focused on just one detail. So here we are with the Get the GIST strategy. You're going to be working with kids to help them be able to extract the meaning or the essence of a section as they go in the reading. And in addition to that, you're going to give them the confidence to know that they can do it on their own, and they're going to be engaging in good, high-quality conversations with their student colleagues about how to get into this difficult work. And I have seen kids, you know, really arguing in very friendly ways about what's most important. And sometimes they'll say, oh, I think we're going to have to put both in there. Both of these things are important. And they will revise their GISTs. So the quality of conversation that can come out of GIST writing is really great, and it's nice to see students having these productive academic talk conversations. One thing I'll tell you, in the beginning, kids might not share. So they might write their GIST and then move on to the next section. So in that case, you need to remind them to go back to the cue cards. Then the next level is that they will share. Everybody will go around and share their GIST, but they will not give each other feedback. And then the next level is when they really start to look at each other's GISTs and figure out what's similar, what's different, what's most important, and how can we improve it. And here are some teaching tips that will help you get your students there. So from the work of this learning log study and what we've also observed over the years is that common problems with GISTs, so GISTs that don't capture the essence or the main idea of a section, are often too specific or copied. So an example from the section we just read, well, that number one GIST is an example. And here is another one. Cotton is bad because plants are smothered with toxic chemicals. So that's a detail. It is not capturing the essence of that section. Another common problem with student gists is that they are too general. And these are what I call headline gists, and they are often incomplete in incomplete sentences. Here's one that is a complete sentence, but it's still too general. This section is about bad things with clothes. So if a student wrote this, I would tell them, you do not need to say this section is about. So that habit that some kids are in, get them out of that habit. And then all we have left is bad things with clothes. Well, what are the bad things with clothes? And there is there anything else it's telling us about clothes? Those would be questions we might ask students to think through as they are revising their gists. The second one, bad and good ways to make clothes, is another example. It does, that is what that section is about, but a little bit more specificity is needed to really capture the main idea. What is it that's good and bad about how you make clothes? Another common challenge that kids have is that they will partially synthesize a section. So this can happen as texts get more challenging, as you begin to use larger sections. It's like kids will resonate with one section and not with the other. So sometimes it's as simple as saying, you have captured only part of this section. Read the fourth paragraph again because there's some pieces that are missing. So those kinds of conversations can be helpful. And here is one that is missing, as the boy in the video referred to, the bad part. Some companies are starting to make clothes from waste or recycled materials. Okay, but we've missed the whole part about the harsh chemicals and how some clothing, you know, even stuff we think is good really isn't good, like cotton we just assume is good, but maybe it's made in a way that is harmful to the earth. High-quality gists are written in complete sentences. And one of the things that we find as a research result with CSR, and this is a very strong finding that we have seen in a number of different studies with different students in different areas, is that when kids have been exposed to CSR for a year, their scores on their standardized writing assessments go up. So here we have a reading intervention, a reading model that has a lot of talking and a lot of reading, helping kids comprehend the text, and we are also improving their writing. And I think that is because of all of the hard work that goes into that learning log, perhaps particularly in the area of gist, because here they are practicing writing a complete sentence that synthesizes a lot of challenging information, and they are learning to present it in a way that is accurate and understandable to other people. And that process of practicing that over and over throughout the year seems to be having high payoff for them on their writing assessments. So, you know, good for kids, and this is definitely an area in CSR where the teacher must insist on the complete sentence. It makes a high-quality gist, it encourages a high-quality gist, and it also is an area where we want to practice that form of writing. So a lot of times for kids, we might start out with a scaffold where even I could have put underneath companies or scientists, I could have put most important who or what, and then a line and the important information. So if kids start with companies, they are more likely to finish with what is it about companies. Companies used to make clothes that hurt the earth, and now they are starting to make clothes that are better for the earth. Scientists have figured out how to make clothes that no longer hurt the earth but are helpful to the earth, and so on. As I noted, the cue cards are very helpful in guiding the gist process, particularly in helping kids go back and forth between that individual think, write, and wait time and that group discussion and share and feedback time. So you can see after the kids have written their gists on the back of the cue card, the gist expert might say, let's compare and contrast our gists. How are the similarities and differences important? Whose gist helps us best understand the most important information? So kids don't have to go through all of these, one through four, but they might use one or some of them. And in fact, you can change the discussion stems on the back of the gist cards if you have better ideas for ways to get your kids to be really thinking about their gists. In fact, the easiest one, and a place where we often have kids start, and you could even cut out this discussion frame and put it on the student's table, is just, how are our gists similar and different? Another really important and helpful way to guide discussions about text, and this might be something that you're already using in your classroom, and if you are, it'll be easy for the kids to transfer it into their gist discussions. But you might select a few discussion stems that you'd like the kids to be using throughout their text discussions in CSR. And I have pulled from Accountable Talk Stems. And on the bottom of this slide, I have included some resources on Accountable Talk, if that's something that you would like to learn more about or get a refresher on. And in fact, I believe they have a resource guide that's free and even a free self-paced module that will help you learn more about Accountable Talk. But simply, Accountable Talk helps kids give structure to the way they agree with one another, the way they disagree with one another, how they ask for clarification. And when I was working with the teachers on Monday and Tuesday, one of the things that a couple teachers shared who are already using Accountable Talk in their classroom or something similar, Talk Stems is another way to think about it, is they said, you know, in the beginning, it feels a little forced. It feels a little contrived. But I tell the kids just to go with it. And pretty soon you see the level of discussion going up and up and up. And I think that having these discussion frames really allows kids to listen better to one another and to know how it is that I engage in a productive academic conversation. So for one day, you might have kids working on friendly disagreements. Maybe your kids are so focused on sharing that they're not really giving each other good feedback. So one thing for them to be thinking about is saying something like, I disagree with Allison because, or I'm not sure I agree with that because. So that's pushing them to disagree in a friendly way. And Colleen is asking, I would imagine that after a few times, they don't really need the discussion stems. It just comes naturally. I think that's true. And I also think that certain kids and classes and schools are more comfortable with discussions than others. And so you can really focus. If kids are really great at certain aspects of discussion, then they may not need or use those discussion stems. But there might be something that you would like them to work on. For example, clarifying. What is your evidence for? I was in a class not long ago, and the teacher had taught the students to ask each other to prove it. So as I was going around and listening in on the conversations, if somebody gave an idea that was not supported from the text, another student would say, prove it. And that would be a signal that the student had to go back to the text and to explain a little bit more about their reasoning. But you bring up a good point about these discussion stems. All of these scaffolds are starters. And once the kids are comfortable, you pull them away. And that goes for the cue cards as well. So in the beginning, we want the kids to use the cue cards as they become familiar with the process. And after a while, they just do the process, and they don't need those cue cards anymore. But what you don't want to do is take them away too quickly before the kids know the process. because kids, if you put the cue cards on the table, they will not automatically just start using them. So that's number one. You do have to encourage and create it as an expectation. And then once they're having great conversations and they're using CSR strategies well, the whole class feels more like a more authentic conversation, and then the cue cards are not needed. And some groups may be using the cue cards a little bit longer than others, and that's okay. There are a couple of other ideas that I'd like to share with you that are related to facilitating group work. So some teachers really like to use a group work rubric. Here's an example of one. It's available on the toolkit, and I would encourage you to change it or alter it to meet the needs of your class. So you can see I'm looking at the top rubric here. So in terms of participation, proficient is everyone participates, roles are followed, and groups stay on task. And then there is what it would look like if they're developing and what it would look like if the kids are not proficient. And what many teachers like to do is they laminate these group work rubrics and they put it on students' tables. So then the first pass, I might go around and do a check as I'm listening in and providing feedback, and I might use a green pen, a dry erase. So I'm going to circle where your group is, and it could be that I'm just focusing on participation, or maybe I'm just focusing on problem solving, or maybe I'm focusing on the whole rubric. So that, again, depends on what your purpose is for the lesson and how much your kids can handle in terms of what they focus on. But for example, in the early stages of collaborative group work, I will say to students, today I am really looking to see that everybody in the group is participating. So when you are sharing brainstorms, when it's time to work out your clunks, when you're doing the get the gist, every person should be participating in some way in the discussion. And that's what I'm going to be looking for when I go around today, and that's what I'm going to be marking on your rubric. So you see how that really focuses students in on one aspect of collaborative group work. As we move along, we certainly would want to see more with problem solving, and I can see that we might even want to add some additional rows to this group process rubric that talk more about the deeper things, like giving each other feedback that's helpful. On the bottom of the page is a role reflection, and that's something that the group can do after they have completed the CSR process. I happen to have put the clunk group work debrief on there, but there's one for gist, there's one for leader, etc. So maybe on a certain day of CSR, you really want to focus on one role, one aspect of CSR. Let's say today it's the clunk expert. It could be the gist expert. So at the end of the lesson, the group just spends a couple of minutes reflecting on how the process for that one strategy went. So we all have clunks and definitions in our learning logs. The clunk expert guided the group to share the clunks. We put the definition back in the sentence, and they can say, yeah, we did that every time. We did it sometimes. We didn't really do it today. And then on the bottom is a group process reflection. Overall, one thing we did really well today and one thing we could do better next time. And for me, these rubrics are really important as a continued tool for students. So I don't just look at that and look at it myself and then put it away or hand it back. What I would do is the next time it was CSR, I would get that out and I would say, now, group, look where you were last time. What are the things you're working on? What did you say that your group could do better next time? Set that as a goal for yourself, and that's what you should be working on today. Another aspect with gist writing that can be really helpful is to evaluate students' gists and also to have students evaluate their own gists. So you can see here on this three-point rubric the high quality gists are written on the left for the number three. So my gist names the who or what and the most important information. It captures the overall idea of the section. It is paraphrased in approximately 10 words, and it is a complete sentence. So that is something that students can use. I even sometimes give kids two gists from the day before and have them look at the rubric and say, please score these gists, give evidence for your scoring, and be prepared, anyone in the group, to share with the class. And evaluating gists is a great tool for both teachers and students. And Colleen has a question, and she's talking about kids who have learning disabilities or reading disabilities. And she is wondering if showing kids the text beforehand would take away from the activity or help. So that's a great question. And if I were you, I would try it both ways. But I am going to give you one caution about showing the text to the kids beforehand. So here's the story. What we want is for kids to learn from the text. So we need to be careful as teachers that we are not teaching the content of the entire text prior to the kids reading and discussing it. Because what we want is we want topics and ideas that are interesting and engaging for students and that they want to talk about. And so if we have already taught an entire text, then kids probably don't have that much to talk about. On the other hand, for kids with reading disabilities or for English learners, to give the kids the text before, to have them preview it, either reading it on their own or listening to it being read prior to coming into class, is not a bad thing at all. And in fact, Colleen, I can't remember if you were here, but the preview portion of CSR does introduce the text to students prior to reading. So that is a place where they start to make some connections with the text. They are introduced to the topic. They are also introduced to a couple of key terms or concepts. So that's another way that they preview the text prior to reading. But having them read it beforehand can also be okay. I hope that answered your question. All right. On the website, we have ways that you can fine-tune strategy use. So I'm just pointing out to you these four lessons that can be really helpful to once kids know how to get the gist, but you want to keep fine-tuning. So we've got a lesson on promoting high-quality discussions with a fishbowl. We have a gist revision activity. We have one that introduces them to highlighting key information from the text, and another one that scaffolds gist writing. You should also note that there are different different learning logs. One of them is scaffolded and has an area where kids can, I think I have an example of it on here. Oh, I guess I don't. It has an area where kids can actually record the most important information prior to writing the gist, and that can be helpful. So there are a lot of resources because this can be a tricky process. There are teacher cue cards, so sometimes teachers find it difficult to provide support to students while they're working, and the during reading on the right-hand side of the teacher cue cards gives the teacher a few ideas for what he or she might say to students as they are fine-tuning their gist work. And here's a pitfall that I want you to be aware of. So this paragraph is about our friend the sloth. Sloths have long gray or brown hair that blends in well with the surrounding environment, making it difficult for predators such as the jaguar to see them. They eat leaves and buds. A sloth's gestation period is almost 6 months. They do most things upside down, eat, sleep, an average of 15 hours per day, mate, and give birth. The probable maximum sloth lifespan is between 30 and 40 years. So I hope that you can notice that the most important who or what is the sloth. I think that's a what. But if we were to write a gist for this paragraph, it would be very difficult because what this paragraph is a list of facts about the sloth. It doesn't make it a bad paragraph. It does not make the information unimportant. It does make it difficult to write a gist. So as you are planning your lessons, forget the gist. You need to preview your reading and think about whether or not the sections actually have main ideas, or if, like many textbooks, they're just lists of facts or information. You also need to think about what your purpose is for having students read. So if the purpose is to develop their comprehension skills, to learn from what they are reading, the content of what they are reading, and to make connections, that's a great reading for CSR. If you want kids to identify figurative language, that might not be such a great time to use CSR because it doesn't necessarily involve really digging into the comprehension of the text. So, as I said, be sure the text has main ideas. You need to evaluate the quality of gists. This is not a time for anything goes. Those gists should be in complete sentences. And we talked about the 10 words, that it can be a little bit more. We want discussion. We want kids to justify their thinking with evidence from the text. We want kids to have lots of practice and to see themselves improving and to talk about what it is that they're doing that's helping them improve. You need a lot of examples, and kids do need help distinguishing main idea from details. That does not come naturally for everybody. So, on the toolkit, if you haven't been on there yet, toolkit.csrcolorado.org, you'll need to create a login. It's free, and all the information on there is free. And you'll go to, if you want to review, the CSR Foundation PD. So there is a whole module on Get the Gist that reviews the information that we've talked about today. And then if you go to the resources section, you'll see it up in the upper right-hand corner, there are strategy intro lessons. And those strategy intro lessons are going to provide all the information that you need to introduce CSR to students. And here's what I was looking for right in the middle of this slide. That's what the modified learning log has for the gist section, so that kids can actually write down. That's what those bullets are for, that most important information prior to writing the gist, if that's something that's helpful for them. So this work takes time. It takes a lot of practice, and kids will really, really get better at it. They're going to knock your socks off, and I think they're going to be better when they're asked to use this skill in other areas of school and in life. So that's it for today. If you have any questions, please let me know, and I hope to see you at our next section on November 19th, where we're going to be doing the wrap-up, questions, and review.
Okay, I posted the link to the evaluation. Doesn't look like there's any questions. I don't see anyone typing, so I think we're good. And Dr. Boardman, if you'd just hold on for 1 minute,
okay,
we can debrief.
Great.